Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation to the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Periscal, Costa Rica, and he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle. Hey guys, how's everything? Okay, good, man. Yeah, I'm sorry about missing the show yesterday, dude. Wife was sick. I had to take care of her. She's fine, though. Don't worry or anything. I know some of y'all are fans of the wife. She's all right. But yeah, otherwise, I wouldn't skip out on you, man. But I had to. Anyway, I'm back now. Yeah, unbelievable news, huh? Did you see the news? Yeah. First of all, Andrew Bacevich is going to be here to talk about the wars. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Man, you know, I didn't even get a chance to actually watch the thing I was supposed to watch. Maybe during the break I'll try to play something. Maybe one of these segments I'll play. Anyway, and then Joshua Hughes is going to be here. So that should be cool, too. I gotta turn this down, don't I? Yeah. So, man, I got tons of news from all over the wars. I got Ukraine stuff. I've got Yemen. I've got Islamic State. I got Iran nuclear talks. I got rebranding al-Nusra crap. I got Israel-Palestine. And I got police state stuff. What a mess. And then, but of course, top story, and I guess the story of the day is going to have to be the Charleston massacre, where last night some Nazi or wannabe, according to reports, witnesses said the gunman spent about an hour inside the church with his victims before the shooting, praying with them, talking with them for an hour. And then he murdered 9 people, including the minister who is a state senator. Which I think you have to assume that the perpetrator knew that, and that this was a political assassination as well as a racist terrorist Nazi massacre. And there's a picture of him. God, he looks like a real jerk, I have to say. You know, people look like who they are in a way, don't they? And this guy, yeah, he looks like a real jerk. And on his jacket are the flags of Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe. But the old Rhodesian flag, as well as the old apartheid South Africa flag. And then, so I don't know too much about it, but I saw some tweets that said, yeah, this is a tradition among neo-Nazis in America. You know, it's not exactly a swastika, but the same damn difference to them kind of thing. And so they caught him this morning in North Carolina. And caught him alive. Some guy tweeted, he said, more likely to be caught alive, mad dog spree murder gunman or 12-year-old with toy gun? The answer may surprise you. Yeah. He didn't say the toy gun part, but that, he was talking about a 12-year-old kid. Anyway, so, yeah, there you go, man. Nazis in America, still a problem. And not too much of one, you know, but bad enough if you're one of their victims, I guess. And I feel bad because I see all these tweets from, you know, I guess I follow a lot of black activists on Twitter. Not that many, but some. And I'm seeing a lot of retweets of people that I don't necessarily follow, but I just kind of see this this common theme that, well, it's just not safe for black people anywhere in America, even in church, and that kind of thing. And it's really not true. Vast majority of black people die of old age just like everybody else here in America, or, you know, cancer, heart attacks, or whatever. Die of our diet. That's what we die of more than old age, I guess. But it is safe to be a black person in America, mostly. But, yeah, I mean, I understand exactly how they feel, obviously, or I can try to empathize with how they must feel, I guess, is the thing. According to, and he apparently left one woman alive, or more than one, I'm not sure, to tell the story. This guy. And what he said to them was, you are raping all of our women and taking over the country? I mean, how stupid is this? Boy, is National Socialism the disease of the stupid or what? What in the world are you talking about? First of all, as though there's some epidemic of black-on-white rapes going on right now, please. Secondly, I noticed, did you notice he didn't go and pick fight with a bunch of gangsters and criminals and thugs who, you know, I don't know, go find the Charleston Crips. They got Crips there or whatever is their toughest gang there. I didn't see him go pick a fight with guys who would be the most likely rapists in the black community, right? Would be the outlaws, the drug cartel guys, you know, in the projects, in the government housing. He didn't go pick a fight with them. He went to church and he gunned down 6 women and 3 men because you, very, very, very broadly defined here, you see, are raping our, again, terribly, you could even say, broadly defined women. What the... This guy... Anyway, so he'll probably get the death penalty, which is good. It's not like it used to be where, you know, Malcolm X could say, well, listen, this system absolutely will not protect us. And so we just got to declare our own sovereignty. Then again, I don't know. I guess he, you know, if he was alive today and said the same thing, he'd have a point, wouldn't he? I mean, it's very likely, right? It's extreme probabilities. He's going to be put to death. This isn't the kind of thing we're in, like in the 50s or before or whatever, where, oh yeah, all white jury says, go ahead then. You know what I mean? It's not going to be like that. They're going to make an example out of this guy. Good. But at the same time, the same cops that hunted this guy down and took him alive today are going to turn right around and kill an unarmed black man tomorrow. So, again, I understand how American blacks feel if they feel like they are just completely, they are an outlaw population. They are outside of the protection of the state, which in some ways is beneficial, but not really because they're still preyed upon by it. It's not like it just leaves them alone. But anyway, yeah, you, quote unquote, raping our women. What? It's so stupid. I gotta wonder if he really said it. But then again, yeah. Makes perfect sense, right? And this is the kind of thing he's gonna do about it. Go to the oldest, most prominent black church in South Carolina and kill the minister and 6 women. I don't know who were the other 2 men that he killed. And, you know, do you know? With terrorism, as always, the action is in the reaction. So, you know, this guy's basically akin to Charles Manson, trying to provoke reactions by black victims, provoke overreactions by the state, provoke other Nazis like himself to follow in his footsteps and copycat type behavior and try to just make things worse. Sharpening the contradictions. That's such a great phrase. I lifted that from what Juan Cole wrote after the Charlie Hebdo attacks, where he talked about how French Muslims aren't a problem, okay? They're not. And they're not completely, you know, outlawed outside of the protection of the French state either. But there are bin Ladenites who would like things to be that way. And there are, of course, people on the radical right in France who like it to be that way, too. And so it serves their interest to pretend. And by the Charlie Hebdo attack, casts suspicion all around, helps divide people, sharpen their contradictions. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, all Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, y'all, welcome back to the thing. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Drop by the website. I keep all my interview archives there, scotthorton.org. Join up the chat room with the guys. Hey, guys. scotthorton.org/chat. It's an IRC free node chat room if you want to join up there. Hashtag Scott Horton Show, like here's a who and all that, Horton. Yeah, Charles Tamasker. Yeah, I don't know what else is there to say. Whether it's the cops or the Nazis, I think American blacks, men and women, need to all carry guns all the time from now on. Because isn't that the way it always goes down? Another unarmed black guy shot down. Huh? Maybe he should have been armed. You'd have a chance. Of course, that'd just make him that much more guilty. Well, a cop blew the guy away. He had a gun! Yeah, but it's not a crime to have a gun. What was the first judge, I wonder, who ruled that, well, judge, I thought he might have been reaching for was good enough? If you shot somebody, you better be looking down the barrel of their gun, or they better have broken into your house in the middle of the night, something like that. But, boy, when we talk about proportionate and immediate self-defense, you better have a good case if you're not a government employee and you shoot somebody. But a cop can say, well, judge, his hand traveled near his waistband where, you know, hypothetically a gun could have been. What? So, life taken. That's perfectly fine. You got sovereign immunity. Go about your business. So, yeah, no, it's true, man. Black folks, they just can't win when it comes to that kind of thing. But then again, you know, I think the reason that everything has gotten to such a crisis point right now, it's not because racism is back on the rise. Not that it ever went away, but at least, you know, in polite company, it's an illegitimate thing. Only avowed racists are a very small percentage of the population of the country, right? It's not that in practice it's completely over and whatever, but I just mean the overt sentiment has been basically overcome. So it's not a re-rise of, you know, attitudes like this stupid wannabe Nazi, you know, killer from last night. That's not what's changed. What's changed is the cops are completely and totally unleashed. And in fact, this is a reason, I think, a very important reason that American black civil rights activists could be very successful at the, well, I don't know very, but they could make some real progress in rolling back the police state right now by appealing to everyone else, too. You know, the cops are the one, they're the greatest threat to all of us. They might have hunted down this Nazi, but hell, if the Nazis were all that American blacks had to deal with, they'd be fine, right? The cops are a much greater threat. The Nazis are hardly amount to anything in America, you know, numbers wise. So, but they could be appealing to Americans. Say, hey, you're not safe. You might have noticed you're not safe from these guys either. And maybe we need to all work together to have some accountability for local cops. You know, well, never mind the feds, but. And I'll refer you to this story. And this is exactly what libertarians explain about the state that normal people just don't understand. You might become a libertarian right now when I explain this to you. Is that everything about government is backed up ultimately by the barrel of a gun. And people think, and I know because they don't teach it to you like that in school. You know? Well, it depends on your school, but a monopoly on the right to initiate force. You know, maybe in college they teach you that, but usually not. I remember I watched a great Access Channel show with Tom Woods and Doug Casey where a lady called in and said, oh, you know, all this stuff about the state is violence. I don't know what you're talking about. Government is that institution by which we all interact with one another. Or something, right? Like, it's the one thing we all have in common or whatever. And the part about it being violent was completely obscured. That this is just some of the things about our society are dealt with by government, and we participate in it. We the people, and freedom and democracy and derp. Right? And yet, here's the thing. The cops kill this teen boy, a white boy, incidentally, for actually nothing. And you can watch the whole video. It's amazing to see. It's at the Free Thought Project, thefreethoughtproject.com. And what happens is the kid flashes his lights at the cop, his brights, because the cop has bright lights. It turns out, we find out, the cop explains. He's got a brand new car, and people have been flashing their brights at him all night because everybody thinks his brights were on. So he understands completely why this kid thought his brights were on. The kid flashed his brights. The kid didn't even know it was a cop. The guy was coming at him with bright headlights right in his eyes. For safety, the kid flashes lights. Hey, your brights are on. You're blinding people. The cop turns around, pulls him over. The kid's afraid. The kid is, you know, and he hasn't committed a crime. He hasn't done anything except flash his brights at the cop to say, turn your brights off. Mistakenly, okay. The cop says, give me your ID, which he has no right to do because there's no predicate. There's no crime being committed in the first place. So the teen, apparently, ultimately, unwisely, decides that he's going to stick up for his rights and say, listen, you know, I don't have to give you my ID. I didn't do anything wrong. All I did was flash my brights at you. And the cop gets so angry at him for daring to defy him. He ends up pulling the kid. Well, he has him get down on the ground. He's down on the ground. He gets on him, grabs him. The kid is just... Watch the video yourself. Officer, what are you doing? I'm unarmed. Please don't hurt me. What are you doing? The cop grabs his arm. I guess the kid struggles a bit with the cop on his back. Cop tases him. Kid's cell phone camera goes blank. The cop's camera at this point is just all over the place, so you can't really see. And the boy is simply pleading with the cop the whole time. The boy is not angry and going, I'm going to kill you, or anything like that. The boy is saying, officer, please! Officer, what are you doing? Oh my God! Ah, help! The whole time, that's all he's saying. And then 7 shots. The cop shoots him 7 times to death. Shock video. Teen boy shot and killed by cop for flashing headlights and flexing rights. You know? I see on black Twitter all day, oh, white people get away with everything all the time. Like, white people ought to be as persecuted as blacks, then it would be fair. Hey, how about rights and freedom respected for everyone? Don't fall for that. And besides, it's not true. Cops kill white people every day, and for no reason, just like with black people. Just because they can, because they like to, because they're psychopaths.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support The Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Okay, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show, here live on the Liberty Radio Network, noon to tune, Eastern Time, weekdays. On the line, I've got Andrew J. Basevich, writing again at tomdispatch.com. He is the author of a great many books, very important ones, The New American Militarism, The Limits of Power, Washington Rules, and the latest is Breach of Trust. And, geez, I think the last I knew, professor at Boston College. Is that still right, Andrew? Welcome back.
No, I was Boston University. I retired from teaching.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize. Well, congratulations on your retirement then.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're still writing. So here, The Theology of American National Security. You're very frustrating to me, I think, or I get very frustrated reading what you write because I think that maybe you're right, that the people that run American foreign policy are actually, my words, a bunch of boobs who really have no idea what they're doing and don't care that much about knowing what they're doing. They have their own little pet agendas, mostly concerning their own advancement, et cetera. And their view of Middle Eastern foreign policy, for example, in this case, is just as absolutely paper thin as you describe it in this article. I mean, could that really be true? That policy is based on such superficial kind of platitudes, the kind of thing, the slogans that they would tell the rubes are actually the things that they believe?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as you do. I mean, by many measures, the people who make policy or whose views on policy get taken seriously in the mainstream are intelligent, they are seasoned, they are wily operators who understand the way Washington works. My gripe with them is that they have a very limited capability to examine some of the first-order assumptions that provide the basis for policy. And to my mind, the direction of events in Iraq today offers a prime illustration of that. In the piece you refer to, I talk about a TV show I was on a week ago with some people with fancy credentials, in which we were asked to talk about ISIS and what to do about ISIS. I found myself outnumbered 3-1 by people who basically said, in effect, ISIS is a big problem for the United States of America, and we need to dive back into Iraq and try harder. The conversation showed, to my mind, a remarkable absence of any awareness of the fact that, guess what, we've been in Iraq trying to sort the place out for a very long time now. We have expended very considerable resources, and we have next to nothing to show for our efforts. So the problem, it seems to me, is smart people who don't have the wit, the creativity, the guts to question their own assumptions.
Yeah, well, that's, it seems oftentimes, not just with power, but oftentimes intelligence is a curse to people because they are so smart that they think they're so smart. And they don't recognize that, hey, there are real limits on what one white person in the middle of North America can know about what to do with the Middle East, for crying out loud.
Well, and I mean, what you just summarized, I think, is the imperial mindset, the conviction that somehow we here are smart enough to be able to understand others and to dictate the course of events on the other side of the world. Imperial powers have always adhered to that point of view, and as long as you've got enough power available, whatever your level of ignorance, you can get away at least partly with pursuing your ambitions. And I think an element of the problem here is that we don't possess the power, as much power as the architects of U.S. policy seem to imagine, and that's a charge I would put against Democrats as much as I would put against Republicans.
Well, and it's true, too, like you say, that, hey, these are very capable people who graduate from our very best schools and do very well on their IQ tests and this kind of thing. They're not completely ignorant, but they have a lot of incentive to ignore certain things, too, where, you know, probably if you waterboarded Panetta and asked him whether we'd have ISIS if we hadn't done the invasion of Iraq and then turned around and supported the resistance from the Iraq war in their rebellion in Syria, whether we wouldn't have got into this mess, he'd admit that that's true. He just likes to leave that out of his answers most of the time because it doesn't serve him well. But, you know, he's no fool, right? Or maybe isn't in some ways.
But all these people
recognize the things, what you're saying about what got us into this mess. It just doesn't serve their purpose well to get into that right now.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point. Because they are basically intelligent and well-informed people, there are truths that if they're confronted with, they will acknowledge, but they are skillful enough simply to dodge the issue. Mm. So this television conversation that I participated in was very narrowly focused on right now, and to my mind, rather carefully avoided any discussion of the events leading up to the here and now, even though those events would, I think, illuminate the predicament that we find ourselves in far more than just talking about, you know, what happened the day before yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, conversations on this show, and I think we're going to get into a bit more of this in the next segment. When you really go through who all is on whose side in this thing, a lot of times reasonable people will decide that maybe throwing up our hands and just backing off instead of trying to choose winners and losers in this would be the best way to go.
Yeah, perhaps I disagree with you here, because, going back to this TV interview, Panetta in particular basically was making the point that either we got to dive back into Iraq or the only alternative is throwing up our hands. And I think that that notion, which is constantly peddled by people in Washington who are committed to what they call American global leadership, this notion that there is no alternative, I think betrays an absence of creativity, and that may well be the central failing of American statecraft right now, that there is no ability to identify that third or fourth or fifth option. We're stuck with the only two, one of which is America, the indispensable nation that has to do everything, and the other one ostensibly isolationist America that turns its back on the world. Now, I'm not going to tell you that options 3, 4, and 5 are necessarily easy to devise or without risk, without their own downside. But I do think options 3, 4, and 5 exist. In the specific case of Iraq today, my own notion is that the better course for the United States is to try to engage other countries in the region that have an interest in stopping ISIS, to examine the possibility of these other countries being able to do a more effective job of dealing with ISIS than we've been able to do. And quite frankly, whether people in Washington like it or not, one of those countries that might be better at dealing with ISIS is Iran.
Right. Now, I'm sorry I got to interrupt you here and take this break, but we'll be right back, everybody, with Andrew Bacevich. He's writing at TomDispatch.com, Washington in Wonderland. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Hey guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Talking again with Andrew J. Bacevich, author of a great many books, including The New American Militarism, and the latest is Breach of Trust. And here he is at TomDispatch.com, Washington in Wonderland. It'll be running on antiwar.com for you tomorrow under Tom Englehart's name there. And so we started off with, you know, a criticism of kind of the very thin discussion as it's held by our national security professionals and in the media about what the situation is in Iraq and how important it is that we talk about the past as context so we can understand what the situation is now, and instead of maybe just as his interlocutors were doing on PBS the other night, just assuming that America must go put on our Superman uniform and go save the day, when, you know, the historical facts might muddy that up a little bit. And I understand what you're saying, Andrew, about how, oh yeah, just be an isolationist then is sort of kind of the argument ad absurdum, and the you know, the peace position as pretty much just forget it, kind of out of the question. And it's sort of the straw man argument of the Lindsey Grahams of the world. Where, you know, even Ron Paul wasn't an isolationist. He still wanted world trade and global engagement and diplomacy, just an end to the wars, right? There are no real isolationists. Even at the American Conservative Magazine, there aren't isolationists. But it does make kind of a great straw man. But then, so as you're saying, options 1 and 2 are full-scale invasion or just carpet bomb them from now on again, you know, like the last 25 years. And options 3, 4, and 5 are excluded. And you're saying that you would like to see America use diplomacy to coordinate states in the region to fight the Islamic State for us, basically, is I think where we were at the break. Is that correct?
Well, to a degree, yes, diplomacy, but diplomacy for a purpose. And to my mind, the purpose ought to be to nudge countries in that region of the world to take responsibility for their own affairs and to solve their own problems. Let me emphasize, the problems are huge. You know, cleavages between Shia and Sunni, between Persia and Arab countries, not to mention the Israeli-Arab conflict. The problems are massive. And were it to be the case that the United States over the past 30, 40, 50 years had demonstrated a capacity to manage that part of the world, to solve the problems, to make things better, to bring peace and prosperity to all, then I would favor it. But it seems to me that the evidence of the results of our interventionism, and in particular our military interventionism, point in the other direction. We aren't making things better. We're making things worse. That's the bottom line. And we're making things worse at great cost to ourselves, not simply in the number of American soldiers who've been killed, wounded, had their lives unalterably affected, but the trillions, literally trillions of dollars that we have spent. So it seems patently obvious to me that there really is a need to ask those first-order questions about what the hell we're trying to do and how we're going to do it. And that's where finding options 3, 4, and 5 qualifies as an urgent priority, to my mind. And the unwillingness of people like those I was on the program with to get beyond the alternatives of global leadership on the one hand versus isolationism on the other is pretty discouraging.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm discouraged because it's all such glittering generalities. You know, right now, and I don't mean you, I mean the narrative in the media and in the government, you know, nowadays they have to talk about sort of, they don't really call it this, but they do kind of identify Southern Shiistan versus Sunnistan now under the control of the Islamic State and that kind of thing. But that's really brand new just in the last year because at this point, they can't deny the civil war they denied for so long, and they never did back in 2004, 5, and 6, explain to the American people that we've taken the side of these political factions representing the Shiite majority against the Sunnis, and they're fighting, and here's why they're fighting, and et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, the narrative then was just, it's America is on the side of the Iraqi people trying to defend them from the terrorists who are trying to undo all the freedom that we're giving them or whatever. But meanwhile, what they were really doing was they were fighting for the most Iran-tied factions, the Supreme Islamic Council and the Dawah Party. And their agenda always was to break Iraq up, to use America to steal Baghdad for them, which they did. And that was what really changed in the Iraq War was the border of Shiistan now includes the capital city, and then to go ahead and break Iraq up because they didn't care anyway. They don't care about the Sykes-Picot borders any more than the caliph does. And so that's why they retreated their positions in Ramadi and in Mosul, is because that's alien enemy territory. And so, but meanwhile, as in your discussion that you had with these guys, Panetta and the rest of these guys, Flournoy, they're saying, well, we have to, The government in Baghdad has to work this out politically to hold the Iraqi state together. When, I mean, that story's been over since 2006, really. And certainly it's been over for a year now. I mean, the declaration of the caliphate was the ultimate declaration of independence of Iraqi Sunnistan. And they're never going to be ruled by Baghdad again. And for Flournoy to pretend like that's, and Obama to pretend like that's the policy, is to hold Iraq together and somehow reintegrate Iraqi Sunnistan to break it off from the Islamic State in Syria and to reintegrate it with the rest of the old Iraqi state is complete pie in the sky nonsense. And so because they won't talk about who's who and what America did before and why, we're talking about a policy where, you know, they could be talking about their plan to reunite the Soviet Union, for crying out loud, for as preposterous as it is at this point. Am I wrong about that?
No, I think, I mean, you're more right than wrong, that's for sure. And it goes back to this insistence upon narrowing the frame of discussion. You know, I think you can make a little bit of, maybe it's a stretch, but make a comparison with the Vietnam War. And the critics of the Vietnam War, of whom I was not one, I mean, I served in the Vietnam War, critics of the Vietnam War, if you recall, part of their argument that the Vietnam War was unnecessary and misgotten was in pointing out that the concept of monolithic communism simply didn't exist. You had to buy the notion of monolithic communism to believe that the Vietnam War was worth fighting, because that concept of monolithic communism said that the stakes in Vietnam went far beyond Vietnam itself, that to lose Vietnam to the North meant that communism, broadly defined, had won a victory. And therefore, if you took that point of view, we had to fight on. But you could only make that claim by focusing narrowly on the events of Vietnam itself and ignoring facts like the Sino-Soviet split, which had already occurred before the first American combat soldier showed up in Vietnam. And I think we're in a similar situation right now, that an unwillingness to acknowledge the complexities, some of which you touched on, in Iraq and in that part of the world, instead to focus on ISIS as the problem of the day, makes it impossible to have an intelligent and informed conversation about the situation and about what plausible response the United States can make to the situation.
Mm. Well, and again, you know, part of my way overly long rant there was about America backing the most Iranian-controlled factions, and then that's basically what's left of the Shiite fighting forces are all the Iranian-backed Shiite militias. And so far, in fact, there's a brand new thing just out today that I was reading this morning about more of these small towns being liberated from the Islamic State, but then the Shiite militias aren't letting the Sunnis come home. They're cleansing and holding on to these territories as they kick the Sunnis out of them, as you know, the population along with the Islamic State. And so, I mean, that raises real questions about what happens if we do get Iran to liberate Mosul, Fallujah, if we ever could get them to invade that strongly, then what's going to happen? We're just setting the stage for that much worse crisis.
The idea is not that Iran is going to do the bidding of the United States. I mean, my point of view would be, and this, I think, is connects to what you just said a minute ago, is that perhaps we should have anticipated, but one of the unanticipated consequences of breaking Iraq in 2003 was to provide an opening for Iran to reassert itself as a Persian Gulf power. And one can say, oh, isn't that unfortunate? But it's a reality. And it's a reality that we have to deal with. And to try to deal with it in a way that both advances our interests and perhaps doesn't do undue further harm to the people who live in that region. So I'm not arguing that somehow Iran is an American ally or that we should make them our friend. I am arguing that they are part of the situation. Mm. We made them part of the situation. And so the challenge is to figure out how to make them part of a solution rather than allow things to continue to go downhill. And that requires creative thinking. It doesn't require sending another 450 American trainers and advisors to try to put together an Iraqi army that basically never existed in the first place. Mm-hmm.
And as you said in your great article here, as you illustrate so well, sending more weapons to fight guys who are fighting us with all the weapons that we gave them last time.
Exactly right. We're arming both sides. That's become our policy.
Yeah, American foreign policy you know, directly out of a Bill Hicks joke, you know, throwing the gun at the sheep herder's feet. Pick up the gun. I dare you. All right. Thanks so much for your time, Andrew. It's great to talk to you again. Appreciate it.
You bet. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, y'all. That is Andrew J. Basevich. He writes books about American militarism, and here he is at tomdispatch.com. This one is called Washington in Wonderland, Down the Iraqi Rabbit Hole Again. We'll be right back. Hey, y'all, Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow. And thanks, y'all. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Yeah, all right. So Coburn can't do the show. He's got other obligations today. Larrison's going to do the show tomorrow to talk about the war in Yemen. Reza Marashi wrote this giant thing in the Cairo Review, ending the Iranian-Saudi Cold War. I'll be reviewing that for maybe running on antiwar.com, and I'll try to interview Reza about that on Monday. Yeah, see, that's the real danger, man. We've had a real proxy war going on here, well, since George Bush invaded Iraq for Iran in 2003. Stupid idiot. He kind of relaunched what had already existed, I guess, but severely ratcheted up the tension between Riyadh and Tehran. And there was a piece last week by Roy Gutman saying that this is the real risk, that there would be a hot war, a real war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. That thing could be ugly and go on for years. And, right now, you know, they're just backing different terrorist groups against each other in Syria and that kind of thing, but, what a mess. And, you know, I think peace is the only real answer. Even Basevich criticizing the vagaries of the intervention mongers was saying, well, you know, maybe we can get creative and think of something to do or something. Go down the list, man. The Turks and the Saudis are working together to support the jihadists. I guess they probably prefer Nusrat ISIS, but I don't think they're too concerned either way, do you? The Kurds can hold them at bay, but they can't get rid of them, and they don't want to. They don't want to do all the dying required to kick the Islamic State out of Mosul. The Baghdad government, its army hardly exists. It's basically down back again to its core, the Bada Brigade, the Mahdi army, Asaib al-Haq, and something Hezbollah. I forgot what they call it, and it's not directly related to the Lebanese Hezbollah. It's a separate party of God there in southern Iraqi Shiistan, George W. Bushistan. And they don't have the ability to take Fallujah, Ramadi, Mosul. Full stop. They don't. Now, the Iranians could do it, but like I was saying in my hypothetical, if the Iranians invade, it's the Iran-Iraq war again. And this time, America's on the side of the Iranians because they're trying to get rid of the Islamic State for us. And they were kind of on the side of the Iranians last time, too, but more on both sides. And they're on both sides in this one, too. That was something we didn't get to talk about, how America still supports the Mujahideen in Syria, for Christ's sake. And a lot of those arms are still getting to the Islamic State through Nusra and their army of conquest all along. But anyway, go down the list of neighbors. There ain't no one to invade and drive the Islamic State out of these three, at least, major cities. They drove them out of Tikrit. But Ramadi, Fallujah, and Mosul? Doubtful. And they're not just going to outright align with the Shia. Even after all this time, they can't even back off Assad. much less switch sides to him. But then that would be completely counterproductive to ally with Assad, the Alawites and the Shiites and the Christian, coalition in Syria against the Islamic State. That would just have its own negative consequences. And can you imagine somehow making an agreement with the Iranian government that they would send in their army, their infantry, to go and sack Mosul? And then what? And the Turks aren't going to do it. Pat Buchanan points out, they got a 300,000-man army ready to roll. They got armor, they got air, but they're not going. And why? They kind of like the Islamic State. They don't mind. As Patrick Coburn has written all this time, they very easily could have closed their border to Syria. And they just don't. And they provide all kinds of medical treatment to the Islamic State, and then all kinds of arms to the Syrian market through al-Nusra and their allies that seem to end up right in the hands of the Islamic State, just like the guns that America gave to the Iraqis that are now in the hands of the Islamic State there. I don't know. I knew a guy back in the year 2000. It was a guy in my cab. Said, "Oh yeah, if you're so smart, then what should I invest in?" And I said, "Lockheed. George W. Bush is going to be the president, and he's going to take us to war immediately, I promise. Invest in the war machine." I never did, but it was sound advice. "If you're so smart, how come you ain't rich?" Because the only things that I could profit from that I know about are I would be guilty of pure evil and a terrible conflict of interest. That's why. Either that or just ain't smart. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. The Islamic State. What an intractable goddamn thing. Prothero's going to be on the show. Coburn's going to be on the show sometime soon again to talk about it. Learn more about it. And again, I'm saying, you know what I meant to bring up? And I had it in my notes, too. I'm so dim, maybe. But that's okay. I'm going to have Stephen Walt on the show next week. But I meant to bring him up to Basevich. Because Walt says, "Hey, look, what if the Islamic State exists? What do we care? Mao won out in China. We tried to insist and refused to recognize him. We refused to recognize the Soviet Union all this time. But, hey, you know, they ended up lasting. And being a real thing, impossible to deny. And that might happen with the Islamic State. So, yeah, they're a cruel dictatorship, but then again, so is a lot of countries. I might add, so is America. So, you know, I prefer that to more war, don't you? And again, the only other option would be burn them to the ground like Tokyo. You want to do that? You want to burn to death every last man, woman, and child in Fallujah, Ramadi, and Mosul? Drop H-bombs on them? And, you know, even if America invaded and sent in the entire goddamn Marine Corps to Iraqi Sunnistan and drove the Islamic State out, still you're just turning them back into Al-Qaeda in Iraq, the local insurgency, the suicide bomber insurgency, the same guys they were before they won. You can't get rid of them. It's like Mickey Mouse with the broomsticks, man, in Fantasia, just making more and more enemies everywhere you go. So just quit. Everything you've done so far, America, got you this far into this mess. How could more of the same possibly help? I'm sorry, all due respect to Basevich, because I do respect him, but I don't want to hear about creativity. You know what I want to hear? The abolition of the national government of this country. Oh, how are you going to go and fix the world when you don't have a military? You know, there is no standing army. There are no federal police. There is no CIA. You're done. We're going to try again on making the middle part of North America a free society instead of having you. And that's not to turn our back on the world. I encourage Americans to go fight the Islamic State if you want to. There are Americans who've gone and joined up with the YPG and that kind of thing and joined up with the Peshmerga to go and fight ISIS. By all means. Just leave the rest of us out of it, that's all. And it doesn't mean that we shouldn't care about what's happening to the victims of the Islamic State or any other totalitarian regime or authoritarian regime in the world, or private crime like what happened in South Carolina last night. You care, but that doesn't mean hire the government death squads to go and fix it. As Basevich was saying, this is the kind of conversation that you can't even have in D.C. That, come on, y'all. We all know that it was sort of our fault that we made it this way, right? Right. Nope. We don't talk like that around here. Short-term solutions only, please.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America Lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel Lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. So Obama's already calling for more gun control. Well, you know, they said, I don't know if this is for sure that this is the murder weapon, but they said that the father says he gave the wannabe Nazi murderer a .45 for his birthday. So what gun control law is going to prevent that other than a total gun control law? You know, outlaw .45s? It's ridiculous. How in the world is that the problem here? And the problem isn't that he's a punk-ass little Nazi murderer. And no, yeah, you're right. It sucks that black people ought to have to carry weapons when they go to church in order that they don't get massacred by Nazis sometimes, which you got to admit, this doesn't happen very often. As horrible as it is in and of itself, it is in and of itself, pretty much. It stands alone for many, many years. You have to go back many years. I'm not saying ignore history. I'm saying you have to go to history to find this kind of thing. But, you know, the idea that, oh, yeah, no, what we need to do is hire a bunch of SWAT teams to take the 300 million firearms. Was it 400 million? Privately held firearms from the 150 million Americans that own them. No 45s for anybody anymore. And if you dare to keep one, then we're going to kill you for trying to keep it. That's the solution to this? Come on. And here's a little bit of cognitive dissonance for you liberals here to drive your mind crazy. You should have seen this guy I got in a Twitter argument with earlier. It's so funny. So this story is horrible. This guy's dog, he has a pit bull, attacked his 4-year-old daughter. Oh, guess what? They're black. The dog attacks his 4-year-old girl. The dad, I don't know how hard he hit that dog. He must have hit or kicked that dog hard as hell and got the dog off the girl. And in one move, did that, grabbed the girl, took her inside, grabbed his mother's rifle, went out back and shot his dog down. The cops came and arrested him. He's not allowed to have a firearm. Well, see, it wasn't his firearm. It was his mom's firearm. She was allowed to own a rifle just because he's a convicted felon. Not a violent felon, but a convicted felon. She's allowed to have a rifle. He had a dangerous dog that just severely mauled his helpless 4-year-old female child. He took the rifle, he shot the dog down, and probably cried his eyes out too doing it. This is his own dog. The cops came and they're charging him for holding a gun and firing it. He'd never been convicted of a violent crime. But that's gun control for you in real life. You know, liberals hear gun control and they think fewer guns in the world and less dying by gun violence. But they don't think, what does this mean? It means prosecutions of people who are violating these laws. And many times, well, that's what we're talking about. Never mind the violent acts. We're talking about for possession. For possession of a firearm. And who do you think gets prosecuted for that? It's the same as with the drug war. Poor black people. Arrested on a gun-only charge with no other charge to go with it. And yes, they do persecute the hell out of white people too, but you know, for liberals, for civil rights liberals, you gotta look at who are the victims of these laws that you champion. I swear to God, I'll read it to you. I had a guy come to me this morning arguing and saying the guy had a right to protect his daughter, but all gun control laws in this case should apply. Well, he had a right, or didn't he? He had a right, but the laws that violate his rights should be carried out. He should be prosecuted. That's what it means to be a liberal and to refuse to admit that you're just wrong. What does being a liberal gun control supporter have to do with this guy being prosecuted for violating a gun law? Well, let's see. Everything. It has everything to do with it. Stop believing that the government loves you and cares about you and means to protect you, and that it does protect you. That gun control is some magic fairy dust that makes guns go away so that people live longer lives. That's not what it is. It's a government program of prosecution and confiscation. And you might have noticed, look at the Washington Post story. Cops gunned down 5,000 people, and they go, well, half of them had guns or some kind of weapon. Yeah, but just because somebody has a weapon and a cop comes upon them doesn't mean that they were in the act of trying to take the cop's life, which would be what, or some other innocent person adjacent, immediate, which is what would make it a justifiable homicide. They don't even have to go that far. To you liberals, to the civil rights liberals, they don't even have to satisfy that they were actually going to do something with the weapon, because after all, it's a weapon and there are laws against having weapons. And if this man protected his 4-year-old helpless little female child, his own child, by shooting his own dog down with his mother's rifle, he should go to prison, shouldn't he? He's a convicted felon. He's not allowed to do that, is he? According to your rules that you believe in. And what a concrete example about the policies I support being implemented in a way that I might disapprove of. I can't hear you. I don't know what you're talking about. What contradiction? That's what the guy said to me. What contradiction are you talking about? I didn't contradict myself. All I said was he had the right to shoot the dog and he should go to prison for shooting the dog. Huh? I think maybe you don't know what a right is, dude. I mean, all liberals in the world. I support gun control and the Second Amendment. That was what he said. I support gun control and the Second Amendment. I support this guy's freedom and his imprisonment. I like black people and I like seeing them locked up for gun possession crimes. I don't know. Sorry, I wish I had something better to say to snap you out of it. What can I say? Here's some Balco to go read. Is excited delirium a medical legitimate diagnosis? Shouldn't matter. That's the fancy term for when a cop electroshock tortures somebody to death hundreds of times a year. They made up new jargon for it, so it's not their responsibility, see? Because they're the government. Your security force. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. All right. Next up, we got Joshua Hughes. Welcome back to the show, Joshua. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Scott.
Good, glad to be here. Happy to have you on. Yeah, everybody, we'll get back to the bad news here in just a minute. But now for the good news. You know, I think maybe I didn't set all this up right back a few days ago when I first started talking about this. How about let's make this? This is the spring fundraiser for this show. And if you donate $50, then you get entered into this raffle to win a vacation to Costa Rica, to the Verd Energia. You pronounce it right and tell us what it is.
It's green energy, and I have our farm here started with the idea of like learning how to get the energy that we needed, or the food, or the biofuel, or whatever we were dreaming of, in a green way, in a way that really was sustainable. So Verd Energia is the name of our farm and our collective free school that we run here in the jungles of Costa Rica on the Pacific coast.
Cool. Well, and I figured out too when I went to your website at say it again.
Verdenergia.org.
Yeah,
well, greenergy. Green energy.
Right.
Verdenergia.org.
It's spelled like Verde Energia, but they share a E there, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And you can find the link there at scotthorton.org/raffle. And what you do too when you get there, it took me a minute to figure this out, but there's three little bars on the upper right hand side, and when you click that, it's a drop down menu thing, and you can find the gallery and look at all the great pictures of the lush jungle and all of that kind of thing, and the beauty of this great place that you guys have out there. And so, and all kinds of great pictures of the landscape and everything. And so, how did this come about? Talk about, you know, how you came up with this great idea.
Well, I was living up in Portland, Oregon. Thank you. I was living in Portland, Oregon. I grew up in Oregon, mostly in Southern Oregon, but I moved to Portland and I got involved in recycling and just kind of trying to climb the corporate ladder. And after 9/11 and after the big changes that I saw in the U.S. and my awakening to political, what was going on, I started to try and do something better. And up there, it was very, very hard to pull anything off. I tried to start collectives and co-ops for biofuels and for soaps, and I found that what I did mostly was illegal, because it's really hard to do things up there with the bureaucracy that was in my way, to learn sustainability and to try and live a different way. So we came down here, and I kind of liked the eternal spring, and it gave me a chance to play around and experiment with different crops and products and try and get back to some kind of local production. And it turned into so much more over time. Now there's 65 owners of our farm. It's a pure collective here, and people from all over the world, and we're just playing and learning, and we have great teachers come through here and teach us things like permaculture, which I didn't even know about when I moved here, but learning about permaculture and what it means is really learning and observing what a local area or local watershed or community or a state can really do, and what is right to expect from the land base or from the oceans around you or whatever. So we're learning to mimic nature here and start living off the land in a much funner and better way than I had when I was making money. Now I eat from the trees all day long and play with my friends, and we have guests from all over the world come here and learn these ways to sustain community differently, ways to govern communities differently, ways to take power from the big corporations and withdraw legitimacy from them by creating our own products and stuff. Getting back to cottage industry. I really love this. It's been a great experience.
Man, it sounds really cool. And how big is this farm that you guys have there?
Now it's 62 acres. 20 of which is like a food forest, mixed food forest, and it was just destroyed cattle land when we got here. And we just got a new farm above us, which is another 42 acres of reforestation we're working on. So I really wanted to I always love to reach out and find new people that want to come experience this. So when I love your show, and I wanted to help support you, and I don't really make a lot of money these days, but I do have the space, and I'm totally happy to host some people and have them come experience what we do and see how we're working towards a truly like local sustainable option.
Mm-hmm. Well, we sold a few raffle tickets so far, and I've gotten at least, two or three responses where they're saying, you know, they're really interested in what you're doing down there, too. Really looking forward to the chance to learn about what you're doing and might just go there anyway, one of them said, whether he wins
or not.
Well,
that's great. It's a place to come and experiment and have fun at the same time. And I take politics seriously. For a year, I came down here and I didn't move here just to get offline. I mean, at first it was offline, but I do have an internet connection now. So I stay tapped into what's going on in the world. And I want to use this idea of permaculture as an antibody or as a way to help a sick system, We need to figure out a new way. So this place gives us a chance to do that. And it's lively. You know, we're here discussing things that I hear on your show every day. I'm echoing through community here and we're learning how to live a different way. And again, withdraw legitimacy from the things that we don't like as I make more products myself and get people excited about things like food production. Again, it's a way to empower community and take power back from the, you know, the Walmarts and the McDonald's of the world and live healthier and all those things mixed together. So,
yeah.
It's a good chance to do it here.
If somebody was so lucky to win this trip to Costa Rica, what would they expect? What do they get? How does it work? Nope, did I lose you?
Hello there. I will put him in one boot house here. I don't know if you can hear me, but
yeah,
you got me?
We've had a little bit of a connection problem this whole time, but now it sounds kind of real bad. Let's try again. How's this?
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
We have a private house. We have a private house on the back of the farm. I'm going to donate for a week to two people that win the raffle on your show, and they can come eat from our kitchen. As included in that, they can play in the jungle here. They can wake up with us and learn how to make cheese or yogurt or soap or whatever they'd like to do. Relax in the jungle, bird watch. We're only a few minutes from the ocean, about 45 minutes from the beach. So if they want to do that, they can go down there. But this place is really kind of off the grid in Costa Rica, and it has a really unique, like, I don't know, it feels like the 50s in the U.S., the way the community works. It's really helpful farmer community. So it'll be a great experience for somebody to come and tap into that for a week.
Man, that sounds like a lot of fun. I kind of got a conflict of interest. I don't think I can pull my own raffle ticket, but maybe someday, man. But these pictures are just great. It looks like so much fun there. People, again, it's Verde Energia, pronounced, you know, by me. They share an E there, Verde Energia, all one word.
Yeah.
And so, it looks just beautiful. And so if you win, you got to pay your own airfare down there, but it's just a few hundred bucks. The drawing is going to be on July 15th. And, so then hopefully that'll give you enough time to get a plane ticket to make it there by the end of August, this vacation month or whatever for people, right?
They can come anytime. So I'll leave it open for when it works for the winner of the raffle. So, and anybody that does,
people, if you're flexible, it stays springtime down there, like you said. It'll be nice through September and whatever. So whatever's convenient for you. It doesn't have to be in August, right? That's good.
Yeah, that's correct. Or next year if they want to come next year, just whenever it works. And if anybody buys a ticket for this and doesn't win the raffle, I'd be happy to extend like 50% off of the cost of living while they're here. So it'd be a very inexpensive trip for anybody that joins the raffle anyway. So
that's great. A real bonus. So there you go. And then, you know, I had a guy that mentioned to me in the email. I only read it very briefly late last night here. There were a couple of different ones, actually, but one of them was saying that I need to make a one big fundraiser and combine the gold coin thing with the raffle ticket thing. So that makes sense. So how about anybody donates to the show, $50 or more gets entered into the raffle. Anybody who donates $150 or more, you get a raffle ticket, and you also get a commodity disc in the mail to you, too, silver QR code commodity disc. That sounds like a pretty good deal. See if I can raise some money.
Yes.
I need some equipment and some. I got to pay off some of the wife's medical bills and cost of living keeps going up. They say that the CPI is low, but it doesn't seem like it to me. Now maybe where you're living, you're getting around that, but over
here,
I got to shop at HEB, man.
We don't lie down here about inflation. We have a 14% a year inflation in Costa Rica in the big markets here.
It's
because they admit to real inflation. In the U.S., they adjust it down and don't count what fuel.
Right.
It only counts like houses and cars or something.
Yeah. Oh, you can't afford steak? That's fine. You just eat hot dogs, so that doesn't count. Yeah. No, we negotiated that.
I'm really excited to again share this idea with people because I came from Southern Oregon and it was a really like do it yourself kind of place. I grew up in a wrecking yard. And then I moved to Portland, and it was very much like the liberal attitude of changing the world, of trying to top down approach. And And now I'm really finding a balance of like building community and feeling like really like getting revolution done, but in a very peaceful and grassroots way. So I enjoy it. And I really do thank you, Scott, wholeheartedly for having such amazing guests on your show and keeping me informed while I'm down here, you know, scrubbing my pool or planting trees.
Yeah. Looks like you've done a lot more for me than the other way around. But yeah, man, thanks. I appreciate it. And this is a great idea. I'd have never thought of this myself for doing something like this. But we've sold a few tickets so far, and hopefully we'll get some more done. If people want to go and check it out, you can just go to scotthorton.org/raffle. Has all the rules and regulations and details on how it works. There's not many rules and regulations. Just give me some money and you get a ticket. And then and you can find the link to Joshua's website where you can see all the great pictures and what all they're doing there and learn about what's up and see how badly you want to go. So
and how much this stuff that we're doing here applies no matter where you live. It's not just about being here. So what we do is really fun. It's like just getting in touch with your food and your community again. So a lot of people leave here, go back to New York or wherever, and they're often running in a much more balanced way. And like
they
feel like they can do something, mm-hmm. you know, help the revolution push forward, you know?
Yeah. All right, well, I'm sorry, we're losing our internet.
Sorry, that's what it's like down here.
Thanks so much, Joshua, for everything, dude, and for coming on, back on the show. Dude. All right, everybody, that's Joshua Hughes. Just go to scotthorton.org/raffle. Check out the website at verdenergia.com or Verde Energia, but they share a E there at the end of Verde and beginning of Energia. You get it? Kind of combined together, one word. VerdeEnergia.org, but just go to scotthorton.org/raffle. Check it out. Join up. Anybody who donates $50 or more to the show gets a raffle ticket, and $150 or more, you get a raffle ticket as well as a QR code commodity disc. And maybe I should just say 100. Yeah, 100's probably better and more likely. So, all right. Thanks. We'll be right back. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders, quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Yeah, it's too bad I can't cuss on the show like the old days, man. I mean, I guess I can, but, you know, try not to. But it's hard to talk about the South Carolina thing without calling people names, you know what I mean? Particularly the murderer in this case. But then calling people, you know, euphemism insults for radio purposes, that just doesn't seem right really either, you know? Why hold back? Well, yeah. Shot down 6 women and 3 men, all unarmed. I don't know if he just, you know, execution style, or if he surprised them all of a sudden kind of thing, or exactly what the hell he did, but they say he was in there hanging out with them for an hour. Or I don't know, hanging out. Maybe he was terrorizing them the whole time before he killed them or something. I don't know the details, man. I don't get it. And I don't know what's the solution to, you know, idiot white supremacist kids. I mean, what are you going to do with them? Taking guns away from everybody else, or outlawing possession of these or those kinds of guns according to Democrat whims. Man, that's no answer. That's crazy. Another reason Jeb's going to win. Because the Democrats want your guns. And people don't like that, man. We need to have a real discussion about guns. Yeah, we already had one. Everybody's got a right to defend themselves. You don't have a right to take their self-defense tools away. We're done here. You lose. And I'm no gun nut. I'm a skater. That's my hobby, you know? But for crying out loud, man, you can't respect other people's freedom at all. And, you know, I saw this ridiculous story where they say, I had it here. I'm sorry. It's Agence France-Presse put out a gun control organization press release saying that, you know, there are this many more murders than there are self-defense justifiable homicides. Yeah, but that's not necessarily the comparison. How many rapes and assaults and less than lethal assaults or possible less than lethal assaults are deterred by the brandishing of a firearm? Oh, you brought a knife to a gunfight, huh? I'll give you a chance to turn and run. That happens every day in this country. You know, there are just two stories last week about two black ladies in Brooklyn who had firearms and used them to defend their lives. And the one of them, the quote was, there were five of them. Think of what might have happened to me. Yeah, indeed, what might have happened to her. Oh no, she should be banned from having a gun because someone else might execute someone else. That dog just doesn't hunt. Think what would have happened to her. Five thugs, guys willing to break in her window in the middle of the night to rob her. What if that was somebody that you loved? Your mom or your aunt or your sister? You're telling me she didn't have the right to take their lives away with bullets? Of course she did. Have every right to shoot as many times as she could. Because see, when they come in there in her window, they forfeit their right to continue breathing. That's it. Oh no, but something bad might happen. Yeah, well, in this case, she prevented something bad from happening. But you know what? Oh, according to the statistics of this interest group, it's just not enough. More people die in firearm-related deaths. So then, but what kind of false opposite conclusion is that? They're saying if we lived in a world where there were no guns, then that murder number would go way down. That murder with firearms number would go way down. And ladies like her who were going to get gang raped to death and beaten to death or God knows what with a candlestick or, yeah, well, oh, well, that's collateral damage for our liberal social policy. We know what we're doing. Because we're going to sprinkle magic fairy dust and all the 300 million privately owned firearms in America are going to vanish. That's the opposite of our current situation. No guns at all in existence anywhere between Canada and Mexico. It's going to be great. Oh, no, of course. In fact, all that means is the cops, more and more armed as they face armed resistance, will be on a full-scale campaign to take people's guns away to try to create a gun-free society. Law-abiding people will be too afraid to risk confrontation with the cops, many of them, and will give up their firearms. And then you'll have outlaws in the state, some criminals, some freedom fighters at war. That's what the Second Amendment is for. Hey, if the government ever pushes it so far that you gotta shoot them, shoot them. That's why it's there. That's how you keep your state free. Says it. And, you know, that law was written at a time when the neighborhood was as well armed as the state. And they were the ones who insisted. And the state didn't really have a say in the matter. Other than, okay, we'll put that in there. So we better hang on to that old law because, yeah, when guns are outlawed, only the government will have guns. The government and criminals and outlaws fighting both. Who wants to live in that world? This is crazy. You think of Billy Bob's gun shop on the corner. Guns. Come to the local strip mall and buy some guns. You would rather have that all black market activity? Really? Well, I'm a sociology professor, and I'm concerned about the amount of firearms, and I'm pretty sure that I don't know what you're talking about. The ban of firearms would create a black market and turn Billy Bob into a warlord? I don't know. Huh. I never had to think about that before. I thought gun control meant I dream of genie, made a magic wish, and made all the guns go away, and then everyone was happy. Isn't that what gun control means? Anyway, I mean, whatever. You know, and for the people who are directly affected by this, I don't care what ridiculous conclusion they come to. They're grieving. But for President Obama to come out and say, yeah, you know, it was too easy for him to get a gun. Well, his father gave him a gun. It was too easy for his father to own a .45? Telling me American men don't have a right to own a .45? He gave it to his son as a birthday present. He didn't have the right to do that. You got to have an ATF regulation making sure to prevent that. And what does that do? Does it prevent that? Or it just makes a criminal out of his father for giving his son a gun that he probably, and I don't know, maybe his father's a Nazi too, but I think we can assume he's not. We can presume that he had no idea that his son would do harm to somebody. Gave him a gun, you know, for self-defense. Or maybe for target practice, for fun. I presume, so far, with limited information on that subject. But anyway, the kind of gun control that Obama's implying that could have prevented this is total gun control. And even that ain't gonna work. You know why? Because that ship sailed a long time ago. Because there are 300 million privately owned firearms in this country. For 300 million people. Anyway, I don't know. I guess, you know, people just confirmation bias, whatever they want. And what to do about the Nazis? I don't know. I think the truth is that the Nazis are as marginal in American society as they've ever been, right? Does anyone take the Klan seriously? Does anybody take the Aryan Republican Army or whatever FBI front group seriously at this point? I mean, if you're a banker in the Midwest, maybe they'll rob you. You got to take them seriously in that sense, but it's not like you have overt white supremacists in government anywhere. You get fired for being overt about it, you know? So, they're very marginal. It's not like they're part of the Republican coalition, you know, or something like that, about skinheads. So they're politically powerless. They are dangerous, I guess, in the sense that sometimes they do things like this, although not very often, really, right? So I don't know. What do you do about it? Don't hire government to solve the problem for you. I know that that's for sure. But, I mean, I think really the ultimate argument is it's just a logical argument about individualism. You know? Racism is stupidity. And seriously, come on, man. I don't know. I'm an individualist. That's my thing. So instead of a new gun control project, I see an argument to win it, you know? I need peace and sound money. Freedom. Guns.